What if your personal or business brand was so focused and so on target that it was easy for everyone in your organization to understand? What if you connected with your clients on an emotional level so deeply that they never forgot you? This is what the most successful brands in the world do. It's not about ad budgets. It's about developing a consistent brand, no matter the industry, location, or size of the company. Discover your brand and create an amazing, foolproof marketing strategy. This is the Brand Archetypes Podcast, hosted by Kevin Scarrett and Amy Zander, owners of BrandArchetypes.com. Join them on a journey to discover your most powerful, true brand.
Welcome back to the Brand Archetypes Podcast, everyone. This is your host, Kevin Scarrett, and I am with Amy Zander. Amy, how are you doing?
I'm doing good today, Kevin. How about you?
I'm trying to stay warm. We're down in the single digits on this side of the state, and it's been a cold spell, but getting out and enjoying the winter fun.
I know. How about yourself? Yeah, you and Francie do lots of fun stuff up there. It's good.
Yeah, snowshoeing and cross-country skiing. And,
yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. I feel like before we get started, we should acknowledge the fact that this is our 50th episode. Woohoo!
Partay!
I know, that's quite an accomplishment. 50,
how is it possible? I hear other podcasts, you know, oh, this is our 800th episode. I'm like, oh my God, how could you ever possibly do that? And it really just truly seems like we started doing this last week.
Yeah, I know, but we've gotten way better. Like, have you ever gone back and listened to our first couple episodes? I'm like, oh, we've gotten so much better.
That scares me.
No, I was just invited in a couple weeks. I'm going to be on a local podcast here, and it's called Every Damn Day, and they do a podcast every day of the week.
Right.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm excited about that. It's like they're interviewing like local business owners and things like that. But I was like, wow, every day, that's a commitment.
Yeah, my friend Alan Voivod has for years been doing the Star Wars 7x7 podcast. He started it, oh my gosh, how many years ago? I bet you he's on at least 2,000 episodes because it's 7 minutes 7 days a week.
Right. But I thought like when you first told me that, I was like, how could he possibly have that much to talk about Star Wars? But really, there's like an infinite number of things you can talk about with Star Wars, actually.
And as we have discovered, for us to talk for 20-25 minutes, the difficulty is trimming it down.
Yeah, true.
And coming up with ideas.
Right.
Yeah, congratulations, Amy.
You too, Kevin. This has been a fun journey and many more to come.
Yeah, so when we hit 5,000, we can look back on this one and say, wow, we really sucked back then, didn't we? Yeah, we're really awesome now.
No, I think
5,000, oh my gosh.
Right.
Okay, so what we're talking about competition today. So this is an interesting one. For the frequent listeners or anyone who's listened to us talk about brand archetypes for more than one episode, you should be getting the clue that We say one thing over and over and over and over again, and that is you really need an archetype to help you differentiate, that you should pick an archetype because it just makes everything so much easier, especially your marketing, so much easier. But with that comment, there has always been a caveat that we throw in, but we've never really taken a deep dive into it. And the caveat is consider what your competitors are doing. Evaluate your competitors. And in some cases, you might choose to make a different choice in your archetype if you're just getting started, so that you don't go head to head with them. You know, so that little caveat, you know, we've just kind of thrown it in as a little thing, but it's kind of a big deal. And you know, so let's talk about our competition today and decide how what they do affects our decision-making. So how'd I do, Amy? Did I recap that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And we have talked a little bit before about industries that tend to gravitate towards a couple other archetypes. And so our frequent listeners will know that we've talked about that. But couple that with looking at your actual direct competitors and what they're doing is a great way to round out your choice of what archetype you're going to take. So I think maybe an easy way to understand this would be with an example. So let's say we're talking about a local electrician, and he's going through the process of picking an archetype, but he hasn't finalized his pick yet. So if he spends just a little bit of time evaluating his competition, they might find that 8 out of their 10 competitors are most likely like all over the place, because a lot of people, you know, aren't really doing brand archetypes anyway. Right. But they kind of feel like they're being neighborly, which makes sense. You know, you're local. One or two employees coming into people's houses, you know, fixing their light switches and things like that. You want to be neighborly, trustworthy, that kind of thing. So maybe like one of the other two is solidly a neighbor archetype, and the other one looks like they're pretty strong in, let's say, like the sage guru. They're going to be like the expert and use stats and data and things like that. So right. So if that's the case, then the majority is neighbor with, you know, this guru one thrown in there. What would we recommend? And we would probably say definitely not the neighbor, because that's an obvious choice and something that most of this electrician's competitors are like kind of doing, whether that's on purpose or not.
And you got one that's really doing it well.
Yeah, one that's doing it well. And then you've got that sage guru out there. So that would be my recommendation to not be either one of those two. So, but Kevin, why don't you tell us why we recommend that?
Well, okay. So before we dive into that, people who have not yet picked their archetype, who are thinking about it or just discovering our podcast for the first time, you're thinking, oh, wow, that really sounds like a, you know, scary step to have to do a whole bunch of analysis. And you know, what if I find out really, you know, that my competitors are just totally crushing it? Now, what do I do? Okay, so while the good news is the vast majority of business, and I'm going to guess at least 3/4 of all businesses, maybe more, maybe as much as like 85 or 90%, will find that when they take a dive into looking at their competitors, they find that their competitors have no brand strategy at all. What?
Right.
Or that they may have a weak strategy, and it just, when you look at what they're doing, it just kind of feels like they're still all over the place, even though you can kind of point to some things that where they may have thought about what a brand strategy means.
Right.
So if the numbers are that big, that's a really, really good sign for most people saying, oh yeah, we don't have a problem here now. But let's just be clear though. That's not to say that they're not throwing a lot of money at advertising, and you can buy a lot of brand awareness with money. You know, we're trying to avoid that, but they could be doing that. And also that's not to say that they may not change their plans next week.
Right.
They may. Right.
Yeah, especially like if we're talking about at the local level, for sure.
Right.
That's definitely the case. And sometimes local brands are doing really well because of like longevity and family names. Like they've just been the longest standing like plumber in town or something like that, and just everybody knows right. their name now. So some people have that going for them, but that's still not necessarily a brand strategy.
Right.
Yeah. So that seems like it could be a huge relief, though. And it has been for some of my clients, because they're like, okay, so if I'm the only one out there engaging this brand archetype strategy, that means I'm going to have this much more powerful, focused brand, which is great.
Yeah, it means you don't have to work as hard to get, you know, once you get a great brand strategy in place and people are kind of tuning into it, if your competitors aren't doing it, they will end up very quickly chasing after you.
That's right. And yeah. Always remember that, what's that saying that goes, imitation is one of the best forms of flattery or something like that.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
If you start killing it, you get your archetype and you start killing it and people are taking notice and your competition starts copying you, don't worry about it. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. But before we go on, I think we should just define a couple of differentiations about competitors. So just take a step back, and it will point out that you need to list your competitors, and there are two types of competitors. So make sure that you think about both of these types. The first one is the most obvious, your direct competitor. And those are people that perform the exact same service or have almost the exact same product that you do. So this would be, you know, like Coke and Pepsi. Basically both brown liquid sodas or right. pops. Yeah.
Right. In a bottle.
And, right.
You know, right.
Yeah.
Okay. And what's the second?
Yeah. Thing? So then the second one is a perceived competitor, is one that isn't offering like an identical product or service, but either the average consumer kind of puts you in the same bucket. So that could be like Coke and 7-Up. So one's brown, one's clear, but they're still pop soda. Right.
They're not identical, but they would
serve the same purpose.
They're beverages. Right.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
You know, when I explain this to people, I use myself as an example, and I say, how, yes, I provide web services. Yes, I provide brand services. Yes, I provide design services. But if I compare myself to another agency, that's a head-to-head direct competitor. But when I talk to a neighbor and they say, oh, yeah, my company's thinking about having a website built, I talk to my cousin Billy. Well, Cousin Billy is not an agency, and even though that person thinks he's going to build a website the same as us, the product is not the same. But in their mind, web developer is a web developer, right?
Right. That's a good, that's a really good example.
Yeah. Okay. So once we have these, what then?
Yeah. So once you have your list of competitors, and in my mind, it makes sense to organize this like with a spreadsheet or something like that, so you can kind of keep it all mm-hmm. together. You sort them. So the ones that impact you the most are at the top, your direct competitors. And you can create columns in the spreadsheet for things like their website URL, their social platforms, their YouTube channel if they have one, any other links or notes. And then on a scale of 1 to 10, you would rank them. So you do that as far as their competitiveness toward you. And then
how good they are,
right? How good they are at their brand and mm-hmm. how much of a competition they are. And then you would give your best guess as to what their archetype is. If there's any, sometimes there won't be any.
Yeah. That sounds like a great idea. I've done that spreadsheet idea numerous times. You know, if you do your initial analysis and you find that your competitors just aren't, they have no brand strategy, you can pretty much stop there. I would still recommend that you keep a list, that you flesh it out, that you still write down their domain and their social channels, and you know, still fill it out, because you're going to revisit this, you know, every 6 to 12 months, and just to check in and make sure that they're still not doing the right thing. But what happens if one of those pops up, you had it listed as number 5, then all of a sudden you find out that they're completely rocking it, that they've completely changed course, they have a great strategy, everything is now consistent. Okay, they rose to the top of your list, and you now have to consider them where you weren't before. Yeah. Okay, so we have the list of competitors, and so the next step is let's evaluate them. So here's your first step. What you do is you take a quick look at your competitors with just one question in mind. And so ask yourself, with everything that I've seen, do they seem to focus on a single powerful emotional connection? That's the simplest way to define if they've got a strategy at all. If they're not focusing on a single emotional connection, if they're not connecting emotively at all, I mean, if they're just talking about their widgets and their bullet points and the features of their product, then they're not doing this, right? So asking that question is super easy, super simple. And although you might need to take a deeper dive, a quick place to start would be, let's see, first thing I always look at is the website. You know, read the homepage. Are they talking about themselves, their product, their service exclusively, or are they talking about the needs of their customers? This is web copy 101. Am I right, Amy?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, if you can draw a 10-mile circle around you right now, go to a not national franchise, but like a local store, look at their website, there's a real good chance that you're going to see what we're talking about right here. That they talk about themselves, they talk about what services they provide, they talk about their product, blah, 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 right? So the next thing that you can do is take a look at their social media posts. Go to Facebook, go to Twitter, go to Pinterest, LinkedIn. Find their social media channels and check out their posts. Do they seem like they're just random picks, or do they feel like they're strategic, that they fit within a strategy? Is there a focus on this emotional connection that we're seeking out, or are they just randomly talking about stuff in their industry? So way more often than not, you don't need to go any further than this step. If you're giving their brand a 3 or a 4 on a scale of 10, and you plan on rocking it whether 9 or 10, then you really have no problems. So what else would you add, Amy?
Well, I would add one thing I find really helpful, especially if you're a business that's on Facebook and your competition's on Facebook. There's this really handy little tool in there that you can watch other Facebook pages. So mm-hmm. I would definitely add your competition to that tool inside Facebook and every week or so, or at least once a month, look at what they're doing, how many posts they're posting, how many likes they have, how much engagement they have, and just see how their Facebook page is doing compared to how yours is doing. That's always.
Now, are you talking about inside Facebook or inside the ad management system?
It's inside Facebook.
There's both. So
yeah,
you can
that's
do that
true.
Within ads as well.
That's so. True. Yes, there is.
Yeah.
So I just want to throw that out there as a little tip. It's easy way to keep tabs. But of course, no big surprise. The most important thing to look at critically too is their word usage, like you mentioned before. Are they talking about themselves, their own products or services? And if they're all talking about me, we do this, we do that, then they are not making emotional based connections. So pro tip, don't do that either.
Okay.
Right? Yeah.
Duly noted.
Yeah.
So I can't tell you how many times I have pointed that out to customers. And the way I usually put it is I'll say, okay, I know this is going to seem harsh, but nobody cares about you.
Right.
And I say that in that way because it always just kind of like, what? Nobody cares about me. No, they don't care about you. They don't care about your product. They don't care about. And it does. It sinks in and it's harsh. It's really harsh. And I pointed out to them, say, yeah, that was harsh. So what do they care about? What does matter to them? And they matter to them. They don't care about you in particular. They care about how you and your product or your service are going to make their life awesome.
Right. And this is a hard flip for some companies who you know, are focused on what they do, not marketing and marketing copy. So one of the easiest ways to overcome that barrier at first is with storytelling. So if you can tell a story about how your product or service helped another client, then that person can relate, oh, I have that problem too. Oh, okay, yeah. And
the story is not about your product. The story is about how your product helped.
Yeah, how it made them feel and they can relate.
Yeah, because you don't have much of a story if you're not, you know,
right.
doing something.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's just another copy trick too. If you're struggling with how to write it more for the client rather than yourself, tell some stories about how you helped.
Awesome advice.
Yeah. So back to evaluating other people though. So read all the copy on your competitor's website. Their marketing collateral, if they've got radio or TV ads, pay attention to them, their social posts, pretty much anything that can be seen by the general public. And how does all that copy feel as one big lump? Like, do you're like, oh, they're pretty funny, or they're kind of serious, or maybe you don't really get any emotion, or, you know, maybe you're just angry at some of the things that they do.
Yeah, but it's as a whole, not one
piece.
Yeah, absolutely, that's a
good point. The whole picture, not just one post or one commercial. So is it consistent? Is it powerful? Is it focused on one way of connecting with people, or is it all over the place? So if it is focused on one, what is that connection? And then once you figure that out, then you can take a pretty good guess at what their archetype is or might be. And keep in mind too, that some people might be doing a really good job at this without consciously saying, oh yeah, I picked this archetype and this is what I'm doing. Some people just naturally are just really good at this or just consistently funny or consistently, you know, one of the archetypes.
I would say most people who are really, really good at brand aren't doing it this way consciously. They're doing it because they're just natural brand strategists, or they have so much experience under their belt that they do these things naturally. The whole concept of archetype branding is not widely known, which shocks me after, you know, a decade and a half of watching this process, way more than it used to be. But if you find someone who's just really crushing their brand, they're doing an amazing job, it is not necessarily because of archetypes, but if they did adopt an archetype, it would become even easier. So anyway, interesting.
No, I was just gonna add to that if you're if you're looking at all their stuff and you can't figure out what their archetype is, then just put none because they're not doing it.
Yeah, there's no need to do a deep analysis.
Right,
if
right.
you don't feel it right away, if it's not slapping you in the face and saying they're a jester or they're an explorer, then they're not doing it.
Right. Right.
Good point. So let me take a step further with your comments about words, and let me kind of take a techie approach here. I suggest that you take a look at their search engine optimization. And a lot of listeners are like, oh, how do I do that? Well, you don't have to be some techie guru programming dude. You know, in fact, you don't even need to get your web person involved here. There's a company called Screaming Frog, and there's lots of applications that do the same kind of thing. So their website is screamingfrog.co.uk. They're a British company. So you get to download the application for free. It's an awesome app. I've been using it for many years. Even the free version will gather a ton of information about your competitor's strategy. So basically what you do is you download the app, you type in a domain, you push a button, it goes out to that site, and it evaluates an amazing number of things, all having to do with, you know, meta content and keyword density and linkage. And it tells you amazing detail about a search engine strategy. And when you could take a look at your competitors and you see, again, like we were saying before, 9 out of 10, you're going to find they're not doing keyword research. They're not doing meta content. They're not doing anything that even remotely resembles good SEO. But when you do find someone who is doing it, you get great insight as to the kinds of keywords and phrases that they're tapping into. You know, what is their focus? Is their focus on a specific product or a feature of a product? Or are they trying to tap into the brand? Are they including brand concepts in their search engine optimization strategy? And that's kind of where I'm going with this, is if you find that they are including brand ideas in their SEO, that can kind of clue you in as to what they're doing outwardly on their website as well. So a little bit kind of under the hood peek at what they might be thinking with regard to the brand.
That's really good advice. Yeah, Screaming Frog has given me lots of good info over the years.
Right.
Yeah, so another thing, like a couple of weeks ago, we talked a little bit about reputation management in episode 48. And I'd suggest part of your analysis and deeper dive into your competitor intel is to see what people are saying about them. You know, the first thing is just look at what their star ranking is, like on Google and Facebook and things like that, or their percentages of good versus bad, or what their reviews are saying. But a couple things to analyze this is, like, you want to consider the ratio of good versus bad comments. And what are the extremity of the good and bad comments? Like, if there's one particular thing that people are, like, constantly complaining about or really touting, like if somebody talks about their customer service all the time, that's a good indication that they're focused on that, and they could be like the mother archetype or something like that. And look at all the social platforms that you can find. So you look, there's Yelp and Facebook and Google and all the different ones that they're on, and you'll get another piece of the puzzle, a feel about the strength of their brand by seeing what people are saying about it. So that's another good strategy. There is their reputation online.
Okay, so let me throw in the next idea. If the listeners didn't catch our December podcast, I think it was called "How to Measure Your Brand's Effectiveness." Go back and listen to that. The idea is you can evaluate your own brand effectiveness. You know, things that we talked about were things like, you know, spontaneous brand awareness and prompted brand awareness, brand salience, and the strength of your identity. You know, good stuff. Go back and listen to it. But the point here is you can apply those same concepts and evaluate your competitor's brand, right? You can see. You know, you can't do direct measurements of things like traffic, but you can definitely clue in on things that your competitors are doing in the context of brand effectiveness, and that will help you evaluate not only the direction that they're pointing, but how good they are. And this is really a more advanced technique that probably not a lot of people will end up going this way, because they're going to get short-circuited right at step number two, where they find out all of their competitors are doing a terrible job and they don't need to go any further. But if you do need to take a deeper dive, let's say you have two or three competitors who appear to be doing a really awesome job. Well, yeah, you might want to dive in a little bit deeper, get some insight on which ones are taking an approach that you might be going head-to-head against, and it might affect your decision-making on what path you take, right?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think one last important point before we wrap up here is that this quick competition review should be done on a regular basis, about every year or so. Especially when, like what you said, is if you make your spreadsheet and you've got a pretty good understanding, and then you notice one of your competitors has shifted or really stepped up their game or something like that, you're going to have to pay a lot more attention to what they're doing so that you can compete better. Right. And it's just one of those annual or semi-annual to-do list things that you just, let's check out our competition and just keep tabs on what they're doing. And when you dig up new information on your competition, it likely won't change your archetype, right, which would be, like a huge mistake. I mean, so like, hey, say you chose the Jester, you're killing it. It's really, really doing a lot for you. And then one of your competitors, you find out, they're copying you. Like we mentioned earlier, it's a form of flattery, copying, right? You don't want to go then shift gears and change your archetype. You just need to do your archetype and your branding better and not worry about them so much, but keep an eye on what they're doing. That makes
sense. I would add, I always point out that it's kind of like a race, where if the race is not you standing next to in a line at a starting line with eight other people, you're starting the race with like horse blinders on, where you can't see your competitors, right? Every once in a while, you get to peek side to side and see who's there. You know, you might be in a race and you might be halfway through before you realize that someone is trying to catch up to you, right? But what if the race doesn't even have a starting gun? Everybody just gets to start at random times. That's what's really happening here. If you start out with a brand strategy based on archetypes, you get this huge lead, right? And by the time they figure out, hey, that guy's like quarter of the way around the track already, I need to start taking off. Because of your lead, and because you are aware of the strategies that we're talking about, how to keep focus, how to maintain power, how to maintain consistency, the odds that they are going to stay true to the same path are minuscule. And because of that, the odds of them ever catching up without dumping tons and tons and tons and tons of money in is also very slim. And even if they do dump tons of money in without the strategy, they're still going to be kind of all over the place and diluting themselves. So when this topic comes up, I point out to people getting the lead first and then maintaining the lead by doing things consistently and powerfully and embracing this idea at all costs. You don't have to worry about them trying to catch up. You'll see them. They will actually truly be there trying to emulate you and copy you and catch up, but they're not going to be able to. So if you're just starting out, it's a different story though, right? You know, if you're just starting out, why get up to the starting line if you know that three of your competitors are already doing the same thing that you think you might want to do? You know, they've already got the head start. It's going to be impossible for you to catch up. So don't go there. So yeah, good review. I think that it's a tough process to really get a deep understanding of what your competitors are doing, but it's important, right?
Absolutely. Yep.
Amy, why don't you give us a wrap up?
Sure, I can do that. If you have any pressing questions about your competition, how to evaluate them, anything that we talked about today that you need a little bit more clarification on, contact us. We get it that you don't always know what you're doing with branding, but hey, like I couldn't go plumb a house or rewire a house or fix my car. So everybody has their gifts and talents, and we love to talk about marketing and branding all the time. So even if you have a quirky question or if anything even seems a little bit confusing, let us know what you're thinking. We'd also love to address these things in future podcasts, because if you're thinking them, probably other people are too. And you can contact us at brandarchetypes.com on all the social media platforms at Brand Archetypes. And if you know what your archetype is, or if you don't, there's a questionnaire you can take on our site. It's free. And also we have word lists for each archetype for $29.95 if you want a little help in the direction of words and phrases. So Kevin, have a great snowy weekend. Hope you have lots of fun out there, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Amy.
Yep, bye.
You've been listening to the Brand Archetypes Podcast. Are you ready to discover your company's archetype? Check out brandarchetypes.com, where you can download the book, find out about archetype-specific strategies, connect with us on social media, and sign up for our newsletter.